Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
An amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show today, and we got some people here that are very good friends of mine, and it's great to have everybody back in studio. First of all, let me thank Jessica for coming back and being a guest host. She was our guest last week, and she's the founder of guitarsintheclassroom.org, which I thought she'd be perfect to co-host this, because this is another thing concerning education, especially for children. And again, recurring, though, you guys came back twice on the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts. First to talk about the whole concept of the deliberate musician, and then we had you come back again with Lance Allen, and we did a case study with one of your students that actually went through the whole process. But today what I want to do is I want to talk about the third thing that you guys did. You did this DVD for the deliberate musician for kids, and I think that I watched it this week, and it's just amazing what I learned from it for myself. I mean, even though it's for kids, well, I'm still a kid, I guess, but I mean, it applies to everybody. So anyway, I want to bring back Linda and Les Wise. It's a pleasure to have you guys back again.
Thank you very much.
And I just want to Les, of course, was one of the founding teachers of Guitar Institute, and I worked with Duke at SC, but his best friend, Howard Roberts, set up the Guitar Institute, and Les was one of the guys that helped start that whole thing. And but Linda also, too, both of them together founded the American Institute of Music in Vienna, Austria, and that lasted, I think, about 6.5 years. And she has a master's in business administration, administrator at the California State University System. She was for over 11 years, counseling students and their academic and life issues. And I think that's important, because that gives you an idea of her background going into this whole process of the deliberate musician, because it's much more than music. It's more about your life and process. But anyway, starting off first, can you explain how the DVD came about?
Well, what happened is this. One of my students, a really talented musician in the early days of GIT, is Steve Freeman. Mm-hmm. And he actually started the Atlanta Institute of Music. And he had that school for years, and eventually he got out of the schools and he started doing these music camps. And so about 4 or 5 years ago, we were talking. He said, well, I'd like you to get involved helping these music camps. And I said, well, what does this involve? And he said, well, what happens is we have kids between the ages of about 11 to 17, and they come for this intensive week, and they form a band together, and then they write music, and they rehearse, and then they do an actual production where they actually videotape it and have a recording. So at the end of the week, you know, and it started to really grow. Like they had the Hard Rock Cafe, their hotels like in the Caribbean. So parents would go there for a week and the kids would spend 5 days a week being, you know, producing their album or whatever. And so he said, you know, and I said, well, I said, it sounds like there's an interesting group of people, but I don't know if they want to hear me, you know, stand in front of them, because I'm already teaching the ones that have lived their half their life, you know, playing the instrument. And I said, what's your problems? He said, well, we have the problem with, of course, they get nervous. When they make a mistake, they put themselves down. Musical problems, like they don't listen to each other on stage, like the drummer would just play as loud as he can. Or maybe they'll ask them to switch instruments. And they don't want to do that. And
or sing.
And the sing, too, exactly.
They don't
so
want to sing.
I thought about it, and strangely enough, with the fall of the real estate market. So I watched a video about a year before on a quantitative easing. Isn't it called that? I think it's where we print money. Mm-hmm. And the Federal Reserve did that, and of course, Goldman Sachs and the whole thing with the collapse. And I said, you know, they were using animations to teach economics. And I said, you know, what if we did animations instead for these young ones? And so they would laugh. There would be little characters and figures and all of that. And so I found some applications that you could create this without being a programmer. And then I gave it to Linda, and Linda said, oh, I love doing that, telling stories and all. So we took all the things about musicians listening to each other and doing other things. And so Linda would have, like, which you'll see on the DVD, where two animated figures go to their secret cave, and they're talking, and they go, Billy was playing in the band, and he didn't listen. Mm-hmm. And then we added other characters from schools, but Linda did all of that. So she created the dialogue from our thing that would match that. And the thing is that when Lance first started playing it in the charter schools, you know, the 15, 16 years old, they'd laugh at first, but then he noticed that they paid attention to the message, because here's these two best friends meeting in a yard going, God, I hated that rehearsal last night because I had trouble.
And because they were animated, yeah. You know, it wasn't threatening. It was kind of funny. It was like, what were these two characters saying? And so it caught their attention. And so,
well, for high school kids, I mean, the dialogue is very polite.
Yes.
And I understand that, because for younger kids, you want to teach them to
yes.
be polite.
Yes. Yes.
So, like, you know, the kids say, thank you. You know, I really appreciate you telling me that. It really helped, you know. Teenagers,
they don't talk like
no.
that.
No. But it makes sense once you get past that.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing with Linda, she created all of that. She goes, okay, I'll do that. So not only did she write the dialogue and all of this, but she picked the characters and the voices for them. Some are, you know, and go
well, on because I wanted, I knew that, you know, it could be younger kids that were listening to this and watching this. And so I wanted to keep it where parents would approve also, you know, because you don't want to get too racy in your language, because parents...
Right, right.
I wanted it to be a good message for the kids, and also that the parents would approve, I would approve of my child listening to this and learning from this.
Right. Well, because the concepts are easy. They're easy to grasp, and I think a lot of younger kids, I mean, I think they would understand it, because the way you present the especially something like self-taught, where,
yes.
you know, you go into that, it's explained really well. And I think the kids, the analogies that you're using in the dialogue help them. But let me just really quick, it's broken up into little sections, and there's like little lessons, so you can do, you don't have to do them all at once. But these are the topics: my secret weapon, are you listening to the other players? Very important. Is your self-talk positive or negative? How do friends talk to themselves? What to do after mistakes in a performance? Learn to focus on the present moment. Do you have the confidence to try something new? Forgive yourself. Don't beat yourself up. How well do you communicate with your band? Why is my dad pushing me so hard?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And I thought this was the really cool and interesting, and we're going to talk about this a little later. You have two chapters for the parents: how parents can help their young musicians in building your young musician's self-confidence, which I think is really, really important. But
One thing just I want to mention about that is that Linda was extremely did a really good job with the one with the parents, because it shows the parents going to a restaurant and eating and talking about their child. So that was clever.
And the husband is really controlling, even over the wife, you know. And she's like, "Dear, please calm down. You know, you're pushing Sally too hard." So I was trying to make a point that, you know, how sometimes one person in the family, and typically it's the father, can be so demanding and controlling and said, "Nobody tells my daughter what to do but me. I'm in control. I know what's best." And a lot of times they don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
My parents did, you know, they basically, their attitude was like, "You could do better."
Yeah.
They never said, "That was great."
Yeah.
And I understand now, but back then I didn't understand. But now I understand that if you say you're doing good, you're prone to get lazy. So they want you to kind of, you know, it's like the teacher that does, you know, "I'm going to give you an A- because you can do better."
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, but the thing is that they, you know, that was the whole thing.
Yeah.
And but it does explain. But the one I like too, I mean, that one with the parent was good because the dad was really pushy and stuff. It reminded me of my dad. But the other one was the one with the mother with the teacher.
Yes.
And she's totally in denial. "Well, no, I know what's good for my child, but what you're doing, no. And you can see that. And then she eventually sees what the guy's saying,
right? And the kid is because the father and the grandfather, he is going to be a musician whether he wants to or not, you know. And she's not listening to him at all.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all seen it.
Yeah.
I think Jessica, we were talking about that before the show, mm-hmm. of some of the parents that we've seen with, you know, with their kids as musicians. You know, they're very strict and very rigid, and it's like, you need to do and it. I know people personally that had issues with that, health issues mentally,
right.
from that kind of pressure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen it like with ice skating, sports.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Tennis.
Yeah. Tennis. That's true. So it's a serious thing, and it stifles it. And one of the things that's stressed in the video is that, you know, they got to have fun. And when you lose the fun, it's just it's a drag. It's just not, you know, it's really hard to be motivated to play, mm-hmm. if you're, you know, if it's just not fun at all. So,
well, I was a fourth grader and I was doing well in school, and my teacher called my parents, didn't ask me, and said she needs to be playing the violin. I didn't want to play the violin. And my parents said, "No, you're playing the violin. Your teacher says you're playing the violin. You're playing the violin." And nobody would listen to me. I didn't want to play the violin. I had no natural talent, no, you know, wanting to play, but nobody listened.
Well, and the thing, too, is you should say the story about the fact, because my wife has a really good voice and she loves to sing, and she knows the lyrics literally to almost any song in any genre on earth. But now she has the business major, right? But she wanted to. What did you ask your parents about?
Well, you know, just in junior high, beginning of junior high, all my friends were taking choir. We always would sing together. You know, in the car, you'd sing to all the radio, you know, music. And I loved to sing. That's all I wanted to do. I'd sing in the shower, and they'd know. No. Mm. And it was like, oh, it was just terrible,
so,
you know?
Linda, why do you think they did that?
Because they wanted me to take more serious classes, Spanish and speech and more math and another language after Spanish. You know, it was just more academic. They didn't believe that I could ever do anything with singing.
Well, why do you think they thought that?
Because they weren't musicians. They were business and you know, you need to make a living. You're a woman. You know, you. They just couldn't put their mind around it. Being a singer could be a profession.
Now, you probably dealt with that, Jessica, before. With parents, were they resisting even the when you're trying to get them to learn music? Do you have any issues like that with parents?
Well, in general, I think parents really struggle a lot.
Yeah.
You know, if they're coming to parenting with a really sense of themselves, a good full sense of themselves, they don't need to make those mistakes because they can differentiate between themselves and their children. Uh-huh. And they're not necessarily living through their children. They're enjoying and supporting their children, but they're not trying to get their own unmet needs met through their kids. But a lot of people start having kids when they're not in a full place. And they're afraid, and they're afraid of failure, and their children are a reflection.
You hit it.
On them. Mm-hmm. And so when that child is doing something as transparent as music, that child is stirring up vulnerability in the parent.
Yep.
Oh,
you
see? That makes
because
sense.
Music is, if you think about artistic media, and all the arts are transparent, but music is so transparent because it's such a public act, right? Yeah. If a child is drawing, they can draw in isolation, and then they can pass that piece of visual artwork on, and somebody else will view it when the child isn't present.
Oh, yeah. This is true.
So the child is somewhat protected from the other person's reaction. But music, it's immediate. And so when a child is making music, they're highly vulnerable. And the slightest laughter, the slightest, you know, look askance or teasing or negative comment can flatten that child's self-esteem in a heartbeat, just gone, right? Yeah. Well, the parent is experiencing, if they're insecure, they're experiencing the same thing in that moment. And so their own response to feeling vulnerable is going to come out. So if they're healed, if they're all right, and the child goes through that, they're going to comfort that child. But if they don't have the capacity, they're going to punish the child because they're now feeling the child's wound as their own.
Yeah.
So you have to help parents be okay in order to help them help their children.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a system. Yeah. You can't break them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I remember even when I was a little kid singing, and my parents thought it was a big joke. What did you do with the money? And I'm like, what? What did you do with the money we gave you for the voice lessons? Because you haven't been...
It's funny that you're talking...
I know, it's terrible.
It's so toxic. Oh, my God.
It's kind of ironic.
They still say that to this day.
It's kind of ironic that they said, you know, they wanted you to learn language and stuff like that. And we were talking last week that the skill of ear training is it's actually what you need. It develops your ear training
exactly.
So that you could learn the language. It's like, shooting yourself in the foot, so to speak.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Well, one thing I should qualify with is her and her family and her sisters are super close, like the Donna Reed family.
We are, and I think they want everybody
to
be alike.
So they weren't trying to hurt you, but
nobody's
they are.
Nobody's a musician in my family.
I don't think parents, well, some parents deliberately hurt, but I don't believe most do. I believe most are just coming out of a place of wound, and they don't know better.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's up to the teacher, right? The teacher has this opportunity if they know what to do, and this book is incredibly helpful. The Deliberate Musician is addressing the inner process. So if a teacher reads this, if a teacher understands it and takes this into their toolbox when they're working with these families, they can start hearing where the parent's negative talk to the child is actually negative self-talk within the parent, and the child's internalizing it. Now they're both poisoned with it, and they can actually help the whole system start to get better, you know?
Right. Yeah, for
Very
sure.
Very good point. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's great.
My dad was one of those people that he always wanted to play. So he did live vicariously through us.
Yeah.
But we were always told, you know, you got to do something else. You can never make a living doing music.
Right.
And why did he tell you that? Because you could have, and you've done a lot of it. So what was it in him that made him say that to you?
Fear.
Fear, I'm sure.
Okay, of what, though? Think about it. Where did he come from and
what
was
they
it
were,
about?
My parents came from New York, and they were poor, and they earned their money and came up to middle class. They were never rich or anything, but middle class. So the big things for them, on my mom's side, too, was the education. You had to go to school. You got to get your college degree, or you're dead
exactly
in the water.
That's exactly what I have.
Mm-hmm. So that was the main thing. So college first. Then you have to get some type of, my mom was a nurse, so, you know, my brother became a doctor. So I almost became a doctor.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, that was the thing. You know, that's a job that you have
secure.
Security was a big thing. Security, house, family, all of that stuff. But it was interesting. My dad, years later, he really liked what I was doing, even though I was crazy and I was doing all sorts of bizarre stuff. And And he, but I remember one time we had a little rehearsal studio that I had a couple of my friends after we graduated, and I was, we were working over there, and he would always come by with his friends and show it off. He never said anything to me, but I overheard him one time, yeah, my son has this place, and it's like a little studio, and he was bragging about it.
Yeah.
And I knew right there, okay, yeah. So he was actually proud of me, he just never would say it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, they were driven by that, and a lot of it was their background. That was a big thing, and my parents were like 1925, I think they were born. So they're right out of the Depression, and that affected everybody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like you got to get a job, and you can't get a job unless you have an education.
Right.
You know, it's different now. I mean, yes, it's better to have an education and have a degree, but there's a lot of jobs that don't have degrees because, like, you know, in computer science, sometimes the technology's so fast. A lot of people, there is no curriculum for that. I mean, a lot of people I know that are programmers, they didn't have a lot of school because there wasn't anything there.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, which is kind of a bad rap sometimes with music, is a lot of famous players didn't go to school. They just played.
That's
now,
right.
Today's world, you do need some of the tool sets that you know that you get in the curriculum, you know, ranging and stuff like that. And I think it's valuable. And Duke saw that you had to have these things were important. Arranging skills, theory, all that stuff does help you. It makes you a better, a well-rounded musician, and it helps you to listen and interact with other instruments. I mean, that's what really helped me the most. Learning orchestration, all that stuff really helped me to interact with other people so I could communicate with them in their language. Learning recording engineering so I could talk to the engineer what kind of sound I wanted. That's where it really came across for me.
Yeah.
And but I think that's so important. But, you know, but a lot of people in the 40s and stuff like that, these guys were great players and they got pushed and you know, they made a record and they took off. And a lot of people think that that's what it really is, that these are just vagrant kids that were playing all day and they just got lucky. But it's not that, you know, and especially today with the technology and just the way the industry is changing so much, it does help you. I mean, you got to, there are foundations, you know, having Steve Vai on. He went to school. He went to Berkeley. He learned orchestration. He learned all that stuff. It affects his playing because he phrases. He doesn't phrase like anybody else. Mm-hmm. He's influenced by all the other stuff. I mean, a lot of jazz guitarists are influenced a lot by saxophone runs and saxophone stuff. But there are new guitarists that I've heard that have been trained otherwise that are listening to other. I mean, I do a lot of lines when I improvise. From flute or violin, I try to. I mean, I'm not that great, but I mean, I attempt. But you know, but the thing is that it makes it unique and different. So you'll do a riff or something like that. That's new. You know, that's like whoa, that's kind of cool. You know what I mean? As opposed to just playing saxophone runs or something. Whatever. You know, you're not doing everything everybody else does. And I'm not saying that that's not a bad thing. But you know, you need to open up, and which is cool. Two in the video, because you talk about how to listen to the other musicians, and that's it. I can't stress that so much. I mean, as a session player, that's critical, because you're being called upon to put something into the arrangement. A lot of times when I was doing sessions, you're writing, you're actually arranging and writing. They're putting you in there, they give you a chord chart, you got to make it happen. So you got to listen to what everybody else is doing. And, you know, if you got an aggressive piano player, you got to lay back. You know, if you have a not so aggressive piano player, you got to start comping a little bit more. And that whole thing, you know, that as a player. And then when you play live, sitting in with people, if you know how to stay in the pocket and stay out of the way, you know, when they call you to do a lead, you do a lead and you do a good one. But then you lay back and you're in there and you and playing rhythm with the bass player and the drummer, and this is something Duke taught me because of the old type of big band rhythm, the rhythm guitarist was the timekeeper, wasn't the drummer. The drummer was doing the accents. So you learn how to keep that groove. That's just that invaluable. That, you know, that made every session. I didn't have to play fancy. I just had to keep it solid and in the pocket. And a lot of people don't understand that.
No, absolutely. Well, you know, it's a team sport,
right?
In a sense, music. It's not where you're on your own just playing and pounding
out
the
music. Well, unless you used to have your own band and played all
hundreds
the time.
Of them,
how,
yeah.
Well, so how do you work with a student that hasn't been listened to enough, and they haven't learned how to listen kind of as a result of that?
Well, I don't know. I haven't spent a lot of time having musicians that weren't listened to, because most of the people we deal with have been playing already. So I'm not sure how I would quantify exactly.
Well, when you're working with children, a lot of times, if you're doing this practice with children, a lot of times come out of families where they're not being particularly listened to.
Oh, yes.
Too much going on in the environment. And like you said, you didn't want to play violin, Linda, and your parents didn't listen to you. They listened to the teacher. The decision was made for you. That still happens a lot. So when you've got a kid coming in and they really haven't been listened to, but they love music and they want to play music, and they haven't been in a, maybe their families have sort of combative discussion. It's a contest to see who's the most right, the quickest, right?
Right.
And they have to learn these skills. How do you help them, and how does your method help kids become better listeners?
Well, we have a six-stage process in the book, and part of that is, you know, writing down what you want and what you don't want. And I taught a class, a summer camp with kids, which I do in the summer at El Camino, and basically I only have them for 2 weeks, you know, so I don't get to go that in-depth like with you do probably with your kids. You see them every day for a year or your teachers do. Mm-hmm. And so I only get a little glimpse of it. And so I try to, first of all, you have to get out what they really want, you know, and that's, they have to know what they want. So we always start off with, what do you not want to happen, you know, and what do you, and so then we twist it to, what do you want to happen? So it's kind of, the main people that Les works with, they already kind of know what they want. Mm-hmm. And the ones that I work at the summer camps, they're just kind of realizing how to ask for what they want, you know, and I have to kind of pull it out of them. And sometimes that's even hard.
But sure, you know, but that's so exciting. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that you mentioned, to your point, now that I've had to process it for a minute, no, I have people like that where they grew up in families where they weren't, not so much that they weren't allowed to speak, but maybe the overbearing parent or somebody kept them from saying. So one thing that I see in that behavior is that in a group of musicians just conversing, right? When I say musicians, not necessarily professional, they're younger people, but they always raise their voice. And so instead of being able, you know, you say, oh, Billy, just speak calm. Yes, look, I would like my music to be played. But they start, like, not screaming, but they're, and so you already see this behavior that they were programmed that they weren't heard. And so, and no one taught them the tools to first understand that and say, look, when you were younger, you weren't heard, you won't be able to get out what you want, but now there's tools you could use. You could express with the band, look, if everybody would just listen, I mean, these are pedestrian things, but basically would everybody listen? And there's a few things I want to say. They can eventually learn that they don't have to raise their voice to be heard. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes this happens. But now when I use the musical thing that maybe, I'm not going to say a drummer because they're going to be a bass player, where they just keep overplaying. And it isn't that they're not hearing people, but they're so used to, from a psychological standpoint, when they were younger, that they were never heard. So now they're going to make sure they're heard within the context of the band. Mm-hmm. And so then they have, so you have these troubles where they're not so much not listening with the time, because that's another kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it is a developmental thing. Someplace in their childhood where they weren't listened to or weren't able to express themselves. And so now they feel they have to, you know, when I was younger and we lived with my grandparents for a while and stuff, they were police officers. And my grandmother was a detective and very controlling. Mm. So when I was younger, parts of that, I wasn't allowed to express who I am. So every once in a while, when Linda and I got together, we've been together 30 years now, but she was in a family where if the father even went 2 decibels on the meter, there was hell
to be paid. Everybody knew.
Right.
While in my family with the police officers, we were already bouncing off of the Beatles. And so, so what happened was I would go, Les, look, you don't
have to. So he's
really
loud and I'm really.
You don't have to do that.
Quiet.
You can say that in a calm, relaxed way.
So when this translates to music, okay, so I love jazz. I love jazz. So
when you
think about an instrumental jazz piece and you've got an ensemble playing, and like you were saying, Jeff, an aggressive piano player, let's just say that you've got somebody that is absolutely hogging the jam. Right. So let's say that person walks into your studio or they're in your workshop and you don't have a chance, you don't get to do these assessments before people come into workshops.
No, of course, not the psychological stuff. Yeah.
But you start to pick up on that. Where in your method, what do you think process-wise for somebody who has that deep need to be heard and they're overplaying and it's alienating to the other players because they're not getting a chance to connect. They have to be in receptive mode the whole time and play to support and play behind that person. What are you doing in your process here? If you really think about how does somebody who has that high need, just like the opposite need we were just talking about, the need to be able to even begin to express what you want. So you have a timid player or you have a really overstepping, bold player, and they're picking up this book or they're watching the video for the first time. Where does the light go? There's a place where the light goes on for people with what you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in the book, where we in part of the process is where we discuss the part about, and when I say listening to each other, but musically blending, having the music become one, and these type of things that we mention in the book, so that it more organically happens, that the player doesn't so much connect with the psychological things that they were never heard, but that they're in this organic process, and we can make it that we want to play great on the overbearing piano player, burning all this stuff down, but I can make it even greater if I blend in. And so in a sense, and even some of the stories we talk about were like with, say, a drummer that can be overbearing, right? Mm-hmm. And that one of the signals of a really great drummer is that you finish 4 hours on a gig and the music was swinging, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't ever remember what the drummer ever did because they were...
Yeah. It was so seamless.
Yeah, it's seamless. Yeah. And that's
we have a lot of experience stories in there, for, you know, so maybe you could recognize yourself in those stories.
So as people go through the pages, they're going to find one story that fits them,
yes.
One that they go, oh, yeah, that's what my bandmate did.
Right.
And,
that's me, yeah.
Let me interject real quick, because in the section, Are You Listening with Other Players, the bullet points that they say that kind of answers what you were saying is listen to the other players on stage, strive to become a team player, let go of your ego. It is not I, but we when playing in a band.
Yeah.
And clear communication is what makes a successful band. Now, with kids, it's a little more, I think you can talk more. When you're dealing with an aggressive guy professionally, you do your job as a professional. You support what you have to do and then get paid, walk out. You know, it's really something.
I'll never play with him again.
Yeah. Oh, you don't get called. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, but it's interesting. But the other thing you were asking about, kids that don't know, they've never listened. What I've done to my, because I always experiment on my friends' kids with music and stuff. I always give them new stuff. What I do is I use songs, especially with a lot of different and unique instruments, and I get them to like, okay, listen to this. Like, let's say there's like a song with sitar in it or something like that. That's pretty distinctive, or a banjo or something like that. So I'll say, listen to what he's doing. So they start listening. You know, they know what the sound is, so they listen and they pick it out. So they start dissecting the track.
Yeah.
And then like, oh, check out this. And then I'll give them one. Check out these drums. Listen what they're doing with the drums. You know, it might be phased or it's doing some weird thing.
Yeah.
You know, something to catch their ear. And then they learn how to break up the rhythm track. Because that's what I used to do. I used to listen to the records over and over and over and listen to all the parts. And okay, I know the keyboard part. I know the bass part. But usually, once they learn how to do that, they can start discerning. A lot of times, they don't know what the instruments are. So you have to kind of show them that, especially with orchestra instruments like cor anglais or something like that. They might not know what it is. But once you point it out to them, they start listening and breaking it apart. Then you give them, you know, it was always by listening examples. But I found that they would, some of the kids that I would show that to, they would get into that more. And then they would come back and say, what's that? And they would play me a clip, and then I'd have to listen. Okay, I think what he's doing there is he's doing this.
Yeah.
You know, especially with guitar, like, what is that? That's a wah-wah pedal. Okay, what's that? That's a fuzz tone. You know what I mean? But they would come back with, they would show me stuff, and it would be back and forth. But you'd see them starting pulling the track apart. Once they do that, then in the band, they know the parts. They can hear the differences. Then in a band situation where they're in a group, then they can see how it all fits. And one of the things Duke taught me was in rhythm guitar, it's not as much being heard, it's felt, because it just solidifies the whole group. When you take it out, you notice it. That's the real trick. And a lot of the studio stuff, a lot of the stuff that you would do as a sideman, supporting a singer or something like that, it's more subtle. It's like, it's solid. You notice it when it's not there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
It's hard. It's a kind of a weird, like a reverse thing, but it's really important because you don't need to play loud. And I've shown people in mixing, you don't need to turn that rhythm guitar up a lot. It just needs to be there to be felt and just solidifies. You can, you know, you don't need to put it in your face. It needs to just be there and lay into the track. And you just have to learn how those little pockets where you go.
Oh, yeah.
So if the bass is busy, make the guitar simpler. You know, if you listen to a group like Yes, where everything, you know, the keyboard, they're all over the place. The guitar is all over the place. Vocals are real simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And it stands out. So all this stuff is going on, and they're doing all this really cool counterpoint, but the melody is simple and direct, and it still hits you. Mm-hmm. So you can still hear what John Anderson was singing, but all this other stuff. And vice versa. If it's a simpler arrangement, you can get more complex, you know.
Or in the case when you were mentioning about, we could have a great piano player that's overplaying in one of our sessions or recordings, right? So everything is me. Let's say I'm producing or playing and it's my tracks. I don't have to be confrontational, too, either. Like, he could be playing, let's just assume, overplaying and all kinds of stuff. And instead of me going, look, don't play that. We know you're great or whatever. Of course, that would cause, instead, you go up to him, you do this, a great energy. I really love that, but let's tone it down about half. And they go, God, he just complimented me. But yeah. So what I do is direct, turn, and shift.
Yeah.
And
then,
but it really works because you're not confident. Yeah.
Or sometimes you can say, okay, look, what you're doing there, put it in the verse over here.
Right.
Put it over there, but lay out here. Then you're not saying, you know, don't do that.
Right.
You know, you turn it into a positive. And that's one of the things that they go in the video is turning it in. You know, it's one thing to say that sucks.
Yeah.
That's really negative.
Because that would turn them off.
Rather than, you know, that's good, but try this.
Yes.
Or some, you know.
Well, let's talk some more about that because you guys get into affirmations. So I'll just share a little bit in our program what we do with the teachers. When you're working with a classroom teacher who's been in the field 10 or 15 years, 20 years, right?
Yeah.
There are certain pet peeves that teachers have that are indelible because every year there are kids that sharpen their pencil right in the middle of a quiet period when there's supposed to be focused reading going on.
Yeah.
You know, or there are kids that rock back in the chair and the teacher's worried they're going to hit the back of their head on the bookcase.
Yeah.
Right? There are these little things that kids do because they have nervous energy or they're not noticing the flow in the room or whatever. And so teachers, after a certain amount of time, if they're tired, they've got 30 kids in the class, they're having to prep for tests. All these pressures are mounting, right?
Yeah.
And so when pressure is on you and you just want to extinguish the pressure and somebody does something annoying, instead of focusing on what you want them to do, you're focused on what you want them to stop doing. So when we use songwriting for helping teachers turn around classroom behavior, classroom routine to build the positives, and I start by saying, okay, what do you not want the kids to do? And they can all come up with that fast.
Right.
So we could write a blues song very quickly.
That's great.
You know,
So
that's fun, and we get a laugh, and the teachers relax after that because they're getting it out, and this stuff drives them nuts day and night.
Of course.
But But then we can get to the relanguaging. Then we could say, okay, so what were you looking for? And that makes everybody stop and pause. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so instead of sharpening the pencil in the middle of the spelling test, what are you looking for? Oh, I want my kids to think ahead. Okay, so let's write a song about the positives. We're going to think ahead.
Oh, that's great. Right. That's fantastic.
Right. Yeah. So why don't you like it when the kids have their hands up because they need to go to the bathroom and the break is in 10 minutes? Oh, because they should have thought when they were at recess before they came back in to take time to go to the bathroom. Okay, so then what are you looking for? Oh, check in with my body. I'm going to check in with my body. Mm-hmm. I'm going to figure out what I need. Oh, I need. And then once we get that door open, I need a drink of water. Mm-hmm. Oh, I need a drink of water.
Yeah.
So they start to train the kids to take care of themselves.
Very good.
So now we're teaching positive self-care instead of extinguishing negative behavior. So
Very good.
I look at what you're doing, you're applying that same philosophy to musical development, to what people are saying to themselves, instead of, I don't want to sing flat. Mm-hmm. In this method, what are you telling them to do instead of focusing on the negative?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All those
doing?
Affirmations are the positive things that
what do you want
I sing
to do?
In
yeah.
tune, I'm expressing. And yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you give some examples?
Well, I thought...
Now we're like, oh,
there's hundreds of examples in as far as that that I sing with vibrant tone, time feel, and
I think what she's asking is how you turn your negative self talk to positive self talk.
Right. Okay.
Well,
that'd
probably be the easiest.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. So basically, what we do, our negative self talk, we're writing down. Okay, I suck at the guitar. I have no rhythm. My reading is terrible. Nobody wants to play with me. People think I'm I can't read well enough. And so then we say, okay, now let's turn that around.
Oh, I know another one that people go, if I have to solo, I'm going to freeze.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
There's another.
There you go.
Yeah.
Stage fright.
Mm, big time.
And a
yes.
lot of what a lot of the negative self talk, it's to yourself. I can't do that.
Right. Right.
Well,
I'm going to make a mistake. Everybody's going to be looking at me. Everybody's going to know
I'm going to look like an idiot.
Yeah. I didn't practice long enough last night.
Here's the other thing, too, is in the part, if we now get down to what you just brought in to play, what we're looking for here is that the first thing is that we talked about listening to other band members. But in the beginning, that secret weapon, your mind, we first get the people that come in our seminars to start paying attention to that inner dialogue that's looping all the time. And it's there all the time, so we never think about it. We don't. It's there. Who cares? And so and if they're not quite ready, they're afraid to listen to what we have them do first is we do exercises, even at the universities, where they start listening to the other musicians. So they hit the coffee shop, and they're listening, and they're paying attention to the other person going, I can't play, I can't do this. And so first now they become aware of this
dialogue. What other people are saying.
First.
So what are your friends saying? Are your friends, saying they doubt themselves, they're no good, they can't play, they didn't practice hard enough or long enough, they know they're going to make a mistake. Are your friends saying that? And then maybe you're saying that too.
That's the first focus. Once we have that, then we start identifying it through the six-stage process. And then for every one of those negatives, we start, of course, you start slowly. You can't globally change everything at once. But you catch one, and then you stop it.
Yeah.
And you turn it. And of course, that doesn't happen right away. Weeks go by in weeks. But as it becomes on your radar, and then eventually we make the shift where you make one change at a time.
We do that as a married couple. Like he'll say something like, oh, I can't. I said, what are you saying? You can do that. it's true. It's really true. I mean, or I'll say something. He goes, what do you mean? You can do that. You've done it before. You can do it today. It's true.
So you're helping each other with mindfulness.
Oh, we do it all the time.
And that's what you want people around you to be helping you, get back on track.
So one of the things that's going to happen with people when they get into this is they're going to start realizing, either their friends need to change or they need to change their friends.
Yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, and we have things in there where musicians, we also teach modules where we have them listen to their friends and all that negativity. And, you know, they'll go, that singer can't sing. And she, you know, and all this stuff. And right, exactly.
Change. We have some stories in there where people are there with band members that are really negative towards them. And they say, "Oh, you suck! You can't sing well." And they believe that, and so they think they're caught there, they're stuck there mm-hmm. with that group of people, that band. And basically, we work it out where they finally realize that they are a much better person, and they can go get another gig, and they do go get another gig. And so it's like. It's just kind of being more aware mm-hmm. of yourself, of your surrounding, the people that you're surrounding yourself with.
Yeah.
And
once you build up your self-esteem,
yeah.
you start eliminating the negative.
Yeah.
Because it's
exactly.
no longer, it's a matter of, well, this person is staying where they are. I'm changing.
Right.
I'm here now. They're not. And that's okay. So I'm going to go here and they're going to go there.
It's like being in a bad relationship, you know. It's
right.
Finally, you get hit so many times, and you're finally saying, I'm not going to be hit anymore by this person. I'm gone. You know, I deserve better.
And that's what's so interesting yeah. about this whole thing. It's more than just the music. That's a life lesson.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So all those people yeah. that once you feel good about yourself, you're not going to take, which can be abusive. You know, if somebody's putting you down, you know, not just musically, but in general,
I call
that's
that
abusive.
Abuse. Yeah.
That's abuse. That's and abuse. If you have self-esteem, you're going to say, hey,
yeah.
you're out of here.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. And that's, to me, is the key. It's more than, I mean, even though music's important, it's part of my life, this whole thing goes beyond that. Just like what you know, some of the other stuff. Yeah, I know we have a few minutes left. Do you have another question? Do you want to ask them real quick?
I didn't have one on the tip of my tongue, but maybe you do.
No, that's okay. Well, let's talk real quick about this.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to say, though, is we're hoping with this, the DVD and the book, that it will make you into a better person to not put up with any more abuse, to go for the best thing that you can achieve and to be the best person you can be and to start talking to yourself like you're your own best friend and that you're going in a much more positive direction with your life.
Right. Because these are this whole thing about the you know, the self-talk, the reprogramming of the self-talk, the self-confidence, all of that stuff, it's more. It's part of what you need to survive in life.
Right. Yeah. Reframing a mistake. I mean, everybody makes mistakes. You know?
But if you don't make a mistake, you don't learn.
Right.
We
right.
learn from mistakes.
It's just how you accept the mistake
right.
and then learn from it and move on.
Well, another thing, too, in the seminar, people will go, I played a wrong note. And I said, really? Are you sure you played a wrong note? Because that book, that wonderful book that woman wrote, The Perfect Wrong Note.
The perfect
one. Yeah. And have you ever read that book?
No.
Oh, it's a fantastic book because on any instrument, you're only a half a step away from, and also your intent. Your intent may have been to move through that note to the next, but great title, The Perfect
Wrong
Note.
No, when I make a mistake now, I tell myself, I'm going outside, it's just jazz.
Yeah. Or Pee Wee Herman, I meant to do that.
I meant to
remember that.
I was just testing you to yeah. see if your ear caught that.
Yeah, right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we are out of time, and I just want to get everything in real quick. Go to www.thedeliberatemusician.com
yes.
to get more information about this whole program. The book, the DVD, they're both good. And even though the DVD was made more for kids, I recommend adults look at it too. So it's very, very good.
Everybody can use a positive tip.
Right. And then also to guitarsintheclassroom.org, I can't stress what they're doing. It's so
great
vital.
Program.
And again, what you know, both of you guys are saying is the fact that it's you know, all these skills, all these things that we're learning from both of these programs, it's much more. It's you know, for our development, whether we're kids like well or big kids like me that
exactly.
still haven't grown up
we're
yet,
all big kids.
You know, I'm still looking for my inner adult, but that's another story. Anyway, but yes, go check this stuff out. It's so important. And I want to thank all of you guys for being here.
Thank you for introducing us to Jessica.
I had to get you guys together because it was really, I knew this would be a great meeting of the minds, and I'm just really pleased.
We might have to rename the show. You know, it might have to be like Party at Jeff's.
Pass the tequila.
Pass the tequila. Oh, my God.
Anyway, I want to thank everybody again for being on Les, Linda, and Jessica. You guys are just
the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody have a great week.
You
thank
too.
You so much.
Bye.